Coming up on The Green from Delaware Public Media. A new wetlands park is coming to a Wilmington neighborhood historically plagued by flooding and vulnerable to sea level rise in the future.
Southbridge is the worst case scenario. It's right there. It's right on the water. And it's flat.
We examine what the wetlands park will do and what other steps may need to be taken in Southbridge. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. We also learn about a fitness park coming to Wilmington and take a closer look at efforts to revitalize Middletown's downtown. Art's Playlist takes us to a new exhibition at the Delaware Contemporary, and Enlighten Me introduces us to the new Delaware Botanic Gardens. It's all next on The Green, where Delaware explores its common ground. But first, the news from NPR. Welcome to this week's edition of The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. One low-lying Wilmington neighborhood is expected to be very susceptible to rising sea levels down the road. But before tackling that challenge, a solution to chronic flooding it already contends with is being built. Delaware Public Media's Sophia Schmidt explores that project and what else might need to be done to keep the neighborhood livable in the long term.
We had that big flood, I think it was 2012. The water did come. This whole street was underwater, and it even came into the neighboring house. If we walk down the street...
I'm standing with Marie Reed on Church, B Street in Southbridge. She's president of the Southbridge Civic Association.
And that's Bradford Street, all of Bradford Street. That was probably our worst, was underwater, and the cars got destroyed. But every area of Southbridge at some point has had major flooding.
Reed is also a lifelong resident of the neighborhood.
My family came in here 1947, and it was flooding back then, and it's always been flooding.
The Southbridge neighborhood of Wilmington is surrounded on multiple sides by the Christina River, a tidal tributary of the Delaware. The historically African-American community is connected to the rest of the city to its north by several bridges. Its position and topography make the neighborhood vulnerable to sea level rise, but it's already dealing with chronic flooding, mainly from rain. A green infrastructure project aims to address the current flooding problem, but it won't be the only solution the neighborhood needs to handle water long term. The neighborhood's low elevation, as well as an old sewer system which combines sanitary and storm water, has meant that for decades, a good rain leads to water backing up in the sewer pipes and pooling on roads or in basements. The flooding has brought with it other issues, like mosquitoes and mold in homes. Residents say the flooding has eased a bit in the last few years thanks to the city cleaning pipes and inlets and DelDOT resurfacing one of the main roads where it crosses flood-prone train tracks. But Southbridge's flooding is expected to worsen in the future as a result of climate change, says University of Delaware professor Philip Barnes.
If you're flat and you're right on top of it, the sea level rise is going to push your flooding back inland even further.
Okay, so in those different topography scenarios, like where does Southbridge sit?
Southbridge is the worst case scenario. It's right there. It's right on the water. And it's flat.
Barnes says from inundation alone, not including flooding from rainfall, the neighborhood could face serious issues by the end of the century. DENREC, the state environmental agency, works with scenarios between close to 2 and 5 feet of sea level rise by the year 2100.
As soon as you get to about 3 feet of sea level rise, then it begins to ramp up and accelerate and inundate more of the streets and the infrastructure in Southbridge. So 1 foot is... At this point, without doing any additional projects or engineering, going to be a pain, but probably manageable. 2 feet gets close to a tipping point, and then I think at 3 feet, you're looking at a situation where Southbridge may become uninhabitable.
The state considers a little over 3 feet of sea level rise by the end of the century an intermediate scenario. Maps developed by DENREC and the Delaware Geological Survey show the scenario would put Bradford Street and parts of Christina Avenue, Lobdell, Peach, Apple, South Claymont, and even Newcastle Avenue underwater. It would submerge Barbara Hicks Playground on the east side of the neighborhood and impact several homes, churches, and businesses. The state's high scenario is 5 feet of sea level rise by 2100. That would inundate much of the eastern half of the neighborhood.
But it's important to remember that that's at high tide, and that doesn't account for any flooding from a precipitation event. So when it rains, the sea level rise amplifies the flood risk.
the city of Wilmington is currently working to mitigate the neighborhood's chronic nuisance flooding. A project known as the South Wilmington Wetlands Park broke ground this summer on the site of a former natural wetland and later brownfield to the west of the neighborhood.
So the idea here is to build a wetland that serves almost like a bathtub, put a separate set of pipes under the streets that only carry rainwater, and instead of carrying it to the wastewater treatment plant or to the river, we're going to bring it to this wetland where it's going to circulate, sit, and interact with the wetland ecosystem until the tide in the river exhausts, the low tide cycle comes, and then the wetland drains.
That's Jeff Flynn, the City of Wilmington's Director of Economic Development. Flynn calls the roughly $28 million South Wilmington Wetlands Park and Sewer Separation Project a water quantity and water quality system. Models by the engineering firm that designed the project show it's expected to reduce the extent of flooding in the neighborhood by 12 acres during a 10-year storm. Clarence White owns White's Body Shop on Buttonwood Street, one of the closest streets to the future wetland park.
Every time it would be a full moon or end of the month, the Christiana River couldn't take the water, so it would always come over here up to our step.
He thinks the wetland park's impact on flooding will ripple into other areas of life in Southbridge.
I think the project's nice. I came here in, 71, and I've been here ever since, and we have endured the flooding ever since then. And now that they're going to correct it, I think it's going to increase the area and population of people, stores, and whatever in this area.
White's business is expected to benefit directly from the project, but businesses on the neighborhood's eastern side won't be so lucky. The park and the sewer project will only drain water from part of Southbridge, west of South Heald Street. Flynn shows me this drainage shed on a map in his office. Mm-hmm.
These are the sites that historically flood. Mm-hmm. These circles here, you can see that there's three sites that are outside of the drainage shed. Our goal is to, once this is up and running, to restudy the volume of flooding and the occurrences here. And then if we need to install a similar solution, we will do so here.
A possible future East Wetland. The eastern half of the neighborhood, including Bradford Street, where Reed says flooding was worst in 2012, is outside of the current project's drainage shed. But Flynn says 75% of the neighborhood's residents and structures are located within it. The Wetlands Park is scheduled to be functional this spring, and the sewer separation project is expected to be finished by the following spring. The project has been more than a decade coming. In 2003, the neighborhood got a grant from NOAA to develop a plan, which recommended the park as a solution to flooding as well as a recreational facility. Marvin Thomas was the Civic Association president at the time and a major force behind the 2006 plan.
We are a small, compact, 1.64 miles Southbridge. It's populated primarily by African Americans, and we have not been able to get the kind of attention financially, support that we think we deserve over the years. And we find ourselves today a little bit better off because of this document.
Rishima Dixon is an at-large city council member with a history of community work in Southbridge. She says the Wetlands Park project is finally becoming a reality thanks to a group of residents like Thomas who stood fast and demanded city action. But she recognizes the project's limits.
It's going to really help one side of Southbridge and not the other quite once the wetland park comes in. So there's still a need for more to be done, especially when, as you get future down the line, of being able to really make sure that Southbridge is not underwater at a certain point.
Dixon thinks a community-led emergency evacuation plan is among several solutions needed to help keep residents safe long-term. Marie Reed is working on such a plan and hoping to formalize it with emergency management officials. She says it should consist of gathering residents at a safe common space like a nearby school until they can be transported out.
Using the residents, because we are a tight-knit, close community. So using residents to help residents with their children, help with our seniors, help those make sure they have their medication, to be at a holding place until help comes to get. Because I really do believe that, again, there'll be another major storm or another major situation where we have to evacuate.
Dave Gula is a planner at the Wilmington Area Planning Council, who recently worked on a study of the flood-prone 7th Street Peninsula just across the river from Southbridge.
There are places where the city needs to say, we're going to armor the shoreline here, we're going to put in flood mitigation measures, we're going to protect an area. But there are other parts of the city where they might say, we are looking at a lot of money thrown in, and we're going to continue throwing money in. At some point, you're wise to just buy those areas out and say, there's a reason water is going there. You know, in a previous life, this was a buffer area for flooding, and we built on it, and maybe we need to let it go back to some degree.
Wilmington Public Works engineer Brian Lennon said in an emailed response to questions that the city hasn't heard feedback from the Southbridge community seeking managed retreat as an option. Lennon said the city favors living shorelines, but that some degree of barrier-type protection may be needed to prevent inundation of inland areas by the Christina. He says Wilmington has applied for a FEMA planning grant to evaluate these needs, as well as the possibility of an East Wetland in Southbridge, and a city-wide resiliency plan assessing Wilmington's climate change risk and making adaptation recommendations is expected next month. WMAPCO planner Gula says the state should take a lead on sea level rise adaptation policy.
We're one of the first states that are dealing with sea level rise because we already have problems, and we're the lowest lying state in the country. So we're sort of a model. We can borrow anecdotes from other places, but as a state, you know, we really need to see a strong state policy on this.
DENREC spokesman Michael Glabetti said in an email the agency does not determine adaptation outcomes, but rather provides the science and technical assistance to help local governments choose their own path. But he called the South Wilmington area not a particularly good candidate for managed retreat because of the critical regional infrastructure that exists there, including the Port of Wilmington and interstate highways and rail lines. He said strategies of protect and elevate are generally most appropriate for urban areas. Marie Reed of the Southbridge Civic Association says retreating is not an option.
Oh, we're going to fight to keep you living here. Oh, yeah. We're up there with hell no, we won't go. And I'm being very, very honest. I've lived here. This has been my home always, always.
In Southbridge, Sophia Schmidt, Delaware Public Media.
Thanks, Sophia. And this story was reported in conjunction with From the Source, Stories of the Delaware River, a year-long collaborative reporting project produced with support from the National Geographic Society, the Lenfest Institute for Journalism, and the William Penn Foundation. And next on The Green, we visit Middletown to examine efforts to bring its downtown to life. You're listening to Delaware Public Media. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. A few weeks back, we talked about some of the inroads made in downtowns around Delaware with the help of the state's Downtown Development Districts program. We noted some of the efforts completed or underway in places like Wilmington, Smyrna, and Seaford. And back in August, Middletown was added to the list of cities with a Downtown Development District designation, but that hardly marks the start of work to revitalize the downtown there. Contributor Eileen Dallabrita tells us it's already springing to life in her latest piece, available right now at DelawarePublic.org. And she joined me earlier this week to describe what's breathing new life into Middletown's downtown. Middletown's population has been growing for some time now. Why is the downtown lagged behind that growth and the addition of a fair amount of strip centers and big box stores and chain restaurants in Middletown over recent years? Is it in part because of all that other stuff that's come into Middletown with the growing population?
I think so, Tom. All the growth was in the burbs, and Middletown kept annexing property, and housing developments are springing up, and all the strip shopping centers and big box stores that come with that sort of development. And meanwhile, the downtown was withering.
And just for reference, what is considered downtown Middletown?
The Main Street and Green Street, the central business district that has all kinds of older buildings.
And that's the one that's been there really since Middletown became Middletown.
Middletown became Middletown in the 1860s, was first incorporated, and some of the buildings date back to the late 1860s.
So in that area of downtown, what's new? What's on the way, or a combination of both?
Well, first and foremost, a 140-seat Italian restaurant, La Banca, is opening in October, and that is going to be in an old 1918 bank building, formerly occupied by Delaware Trust. It is quite a space, and probably the biggest investment thus far.
And what other things are there that maybe people have not been aware of, or maybe are just becoming aware of?
Volunteer Brewing is very popular, and it is growing. They bought the house next door to it to expand their business. There are a number of boutiques, Nicole J and Stubborn Soul. There are lots of services, too. I mean, there's even a karate school and various smaller restaurants. There's the Metro Grill and Pub. The theater, the old Everett Theater that was featured in the movie Dead Poets Society, is staging monthly productions.
And it's interesting to me, having just been there recently, that it is kind of an interesting mix. I mean, in some ways, like some of those boutiques you mentioned, you kind of have that New Hope, Pennsylvania type of feel. But it also, as you said, has some of the more typical stuff, like a bar and a karate studio. Is there a certain personality to Middletown's downtown, or one they're trying to build?
I think there is. I mean, it's very indie, very independent, and it's very Delaware. One of the places that has opened within the past year downtown is called the Little Emporium, and they have cutting boards that are shaped like the state of Delaware. They're very popular. They have sold out of art pieces that you hang on walls that are made from Delaware license plates. It very much says the first state.
I was going to say, it was fascinating having just walked down that street and walked past the Little Emporium. It's right there by the Everett. And right next to that, there's like a little pocket park as well, which is also something you're starting to see a little bit more in some of these downtown areas, trying to incorporate not just the shops, but these like little public spaces as well.
Yeah, I think that's very attractive. It's that place where you can go and eat your ice cream cones with your kids.
In your story, you mentioned some of the financial backing, the grants and such that are helping this along, including the recent designation as a downtown development district under that state program. Is the expectation that that's going to help even more? Is there still a fair amount of good space available to someone who wants to get into the Middletown downtown area?
Yes, the grants will definitely help. And Middletown has had a significant investor, Rick Clark, who came in December of 2005 and has done a lot in a short amount of time. So it's a combination, I think, between the grants and government help, and also attracting committed developers who see promise in your particular community.
And like anywhere else, it is a matter of just kind of getting to that critical mass, right? That to have enough of businesses together, restaurants together, and maybe even like a little bit of residential to make it feel like a real place.
That blend is so important. I don't think that people who are so parched for time are going to go anywhere if they only have one choice. So when you go to downtown Middletown, and you can go to Marlena's, a great deli where I had lunch the other day, mm-hmm. and you can then do a little bit of shopping. You can get your skirt hemmed at the tailor's, and you can do all kinds of things and stop by the bakery and take home some cupcakes.
So what are some of these merchants doing to establish themselves and downtown as a destination? How are they kind of trying to create that sense of destination place for people?
They are very excited about various festivals. There's a craft festival coming up. It's got more than 30 vendors and attracts a lot of people. That there is there's going to be a Halloween event downtown. The Peach Festival, which has been going on in Middletown for many years, was very successful and drew a lot of folks downtown. And also, they're doing things like Yappy Hour, where people bring their dogs on Friday nights and the stores stay open later. And that's bringing in people who might not have otherwise come to downtown. They also are very hip about social media. They are very active on Facebook and Instagram. and are really good about developing lists of customers so that they can do email blasts and reach out to folks.
What are some of the challenges that they're still facing in kind of building up this downtown area in Middletown?
Well, there are some significant challenges and that the merchants are concerned about. And first and foremost is signage, that there is abundant free parking in downtown Middletown, but unless you were familiar with the area, you would not know where to find it because there isn't any signage directing people to that. Also, the merchants would like to have signage that directs them to individual businesses. And also some sort of a brochure, something similar to what has been very successful for Newark, where you have a map of downtown and who is where, and how to get there and what they sell.
You mentioned the parking. How about traffic? I know that particular spot in Middletown can be very slow moving at times, particularly when you're talking about, you know, morning and evening rush. Is that something that merchants are also maybe a little bit worried about?
I think that they are more concerned that people skip going through downtown. They like having people come through the town. And hopefully while you're stopped at the light, you will recognize that there's a great new store there and think, well, I've got to come back.
Finally, how optimistic are those merchants that you talk to that the obstacles they have to overcome can be overcome and that they're on the right track to a thriving downtown Middletown?
I think they're feeling really good. With every new space that opens, with every space that expands, and quite a few businesses are doing so well that they have expanded, it really helps them to reach that critical mass that will make Middletown a destination.
Thanks to contributor Eileen Dalabrida for her time on The Green this week. Eileen's piece on the revitalization of Middletown's downtown is available right now at DelawarePublic.org. And stay with us. A new exhibition at the Delaware Contemporary in Wilmington is the focus of this week's Arts Playlist. That's next on The Green, here on Delaware Public Media. Welcome back to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. Amphibian Relationships by Chinese contemporary artist number 223, a.k.a. Lin Zhipeng, is now on display at the Delaware Contemporary in Wilmington. The Delaware Contemporary's Gretchen Hupful, curator of contemporary art, Catherine Page, says this is the first solo exhibition of number 223's works in the United States. And on this week's Arts Playlist, Paige tells Delaware Public Media's Kelly Steele more about these 40 new works created in both China and the United States.
Well, it's unique in several respects. First, when you walk in the gallery, you'll notice the installation. It has a band of pink that circumscribes the walls around the gallery. And that serves as a backdrop in which the curator, Willie Yao, wanted to install the photographs. Usually when you install photographs, they're framed or they're behind plexiglass. They're hung linearly in one line, meaning. But these are hung different. There's a cadence to the way Willie installed them. And I think that sets up a narrative for each of the photographs to connect and interact and have some kind of energy. If they were hung the standard linear, there wouldn't be the playfulness that you would experience in a traditional setting. So he has created a lot more activity, visual activity, by the placement of the photographs.
You know, I was looking at photographs online, and we're talking about the visual aspect of them and the lines and the cleanliness. Being a little obsessive compulsive myself, I like it. Do you think people coming to this exhibition will like it as well?
Well, being visual people, I think that it will be arresting because you walk in and all of a sudden you think, oh, wait, something's different, something's unique. And then the curator has done his job because he has set up an unusual engagement with work, unlike going through other galleries or museums where it's either salon style. But what he has taken is that salon style idea and then brought it to a minimalist perspective. And so already he has laid the groundwork or the foundation for a unusual and visually arresting experience.
All right, we're speaking with Catherine Page. Catherine is the Gretchen Hupfel Curator of Contemporary Art at the Delaware Contemporary. Give me some background, if you will, about the artist, number 223, a.k.a. Lin Zhipeng.
Well, he's was born in China and graduated from the Guangdong University of Foreign Studies with a major in finance. But his real love is photography. And so he's passionate about urban life and travel. He's passionate about emotional connections. He's passionate about recording that. And he's very well known artist in China. His work has been shown in magazines in China, such as Vice, S Magazine, Vision, City Pictorial. He's even had some of his photographs used by Converse, Nike, Glaceau, Vitamin Water, and Bacardi. So he is extremely prolific and well-known in China. And so we are so happy to have his work on display at the Delaware Contemporary.
Was the work of number 223 influenced by any American photographers?
I believe one was William Eggleston, and it's his storytelling through color and portraiture and details. And so that was one of his influences, American influences.
Catherine, what else do we want people to know about this new exhibition on exhibit now at the Delaware Contemporary? In fact, it'll be on exhibit through October 31st. It's called Amphibian Relationships. What else do we want people to know?
Well, the title, it might be confusing to some. You know, what does he mean, amphibian relationships? And because that was my first question when Willie Yao presented his thesis to me. And so I was confused because amphibians are animals that live in aquatic aquatic ecosystems. And then I thought about natural human relationships. You know, there is some the physicality involves horizontality. But the other definition of amphibians are having two modes of existence, or double nature, or inhabiting a variety of abodes. And so in this exhibition, as I walked around, I began to see doubles in the images. And so it begs the question of habitat or duality and human relationships. Generally involves more than one. And so you see two glasses or two tree trunks or two couples coupling. And so he's really taken that amphibian relationships to a unique perspective. And that is the role of photographer or role of artist is to offer unique perspectives and invite dialogue about technology, ideas about humanity, and their relationship to the world.
Where can people get more information or maybe view some of the photographs before they attend the exhibit?
On our website, decontemporary.org, under current exhibitions.
And we briefly mentioned Willie Zhao. Anything you want to say about Willie?
Willie is an extremely creative person. He is from Shanghai, China, and he is currently our creative in residence, and he is in charge or tasked with creating three exhibitions. And the first one was in the Draper Experiment, or the Draper Gallery, for our Draper Experiment called Half Half. And then this one, Amphibian Relationships, he curated. And then next year he'll be curating another exhibition for us. And so he lives currently in New York City, and he is a designer and a curator and a writer. And so we are thrilled to have him on our staff.
Thanks to Catherine Page, the Gretchen Hupfel Curator of Contemporary Art at the Delaware Contemporary, and our Kelly Steele, for their time on this week's Arts Playlist. The exhibition Amphibian Relationships is on display at the Delaware Contemporary's DuPont One Gallery through October 31st. And stay with us. The Green continues with a look at a new public outdoor workout space coming to Wilmington this month. You're listening to Delaware Public Media. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. Visitors to Herman Holloway Park on Wilmington's east side will find something new starting next week. An outdoor fitness park is being tucked into that park with the help of AARP. It's part of AARP's national initiative to sponsor a fitness park in every state, Washington, D.C., Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands, as the organization commemorates its 60th anniversary. This Wilmington park opens Wednesday with a ribbon cutting. But AARP Delaware's Communications Director, Kimberly Iapolucci, joined me earlier this week to tell us a bit more about the new space and AARP's initiative. So what will the new fitness park coming to Herman Holloway Park have in it? What will it look like for people who go there to use it?
We're working with a national nonprofit called FitLot to develop these fitness parks all over the country. We work with local park and recreation departments, and FitLot is a 501c3 organization that helps communities find the resources they need to plan, build, and program outdoor fitness parks. And in each community, AARP state office staff and volunteers work with community leaders to sponsor these outdoor fitness parks with the intention that the whole community can benefit with a free opportunity to get healthy and fit. Now, each park that we've opened this year has exercise equipment that can be adapted to meet a wide range of fitness levels and abilities. You can get a full body workout in these fitness parks. And so we choose an existing park that, could well accommodate the space and where anyone in the community could have the opportunity to play in the park and improve their health and access the equipment.
Are there some examples of what that equipment is that people will be able to use?
Well, it's all in one tented area. It is branded with AARP branding, and basically the equipment can give you a full body workout. And when we do a ribbon cutting and grand opening for the park on September 25th, from 11 to 1, you will have people from this organization FitLot there to demonstrate how you can use the different pieces of equipment to get a full body workout, or how you can adapt those pieces, for maybe some various special needs that people may have. So it's really a very accessible piece of equipment. It's free to the community. And really, we can't imagine what could be better to celebrate healthy aging in our communities.
I was going to say, you mentioned it's about celebrating healthy aging. And even though most people associate AARP with seniors, this equipment is not limited just to seniors, right? And this is something for the entire community to use.
Oh, absolutely. The equipment would be available to anyone. In fact, it's designed so that it can be adapted for different, height levels or size levels. Children can feasibly use it. And so it's really a nice design so that anyone can use it. And, here at AARP, we recognize that life is becoming more intergenerational, and we approach our work in a way where we can serve not only people over 50, but also their families.
How was Herman Holloway Park selected as a site for this fitness park?
Well, we know that the park is readily used already. It gets a good attendance. They have concerts there and different outdoor activities at the park. But there's also a healthy community around there that really would work well with it. There are some towers around the park where some people over 50, reside in those towers. And so we felt it was a good location that would be where it would be the equipment would be readily used.
And as you noted at the top, this initiative to sponsor a fitness park in every state is part of AARP's 60th anniversary. Tell us a little bit more about the impetus behind marking the anniversary in this way, focusing on fitness as opposed to maybe some other way.
Well, we are celebrating our anniversary all year in a variety of ways. This is just one of them. And, we have such a deep commitment to communities at AARP. We are a national organization with about 38 million members nationwide. But we have state offices in every state. And in Delaware, we have 187,000 members, which is quite a big penetration. And so we have the ability to take some of our big national projects like the 60th anniversary and really localize them and really make them work well for our local community. We kind of can get our arms into the community. We work with the city, the county, the state on projects like this that really benefit people on the local level. And so there's this wonderful nationwide back and forth between AARP and the local state offices where we can really deliver customized benefits and programs for people over 50 and their families that really work well for people in communities.
And my understanding is Delaware is one of the first states, one of the first places to get one of these parks actually up and running, right?
That's correct. The first park we launched was actually in Florida, and we've done a few already. We're going to continue to open these fitness parks all over the country for the next couple of years. And so we were happy to be one of the first states, and, we want to make a big splash about it. The event is going to be a lot of fun. We have our AARP state director speaking. Mayor Mike Perzicki will be there. Wilmington City Council President Hanifa Shabazz will be there. We're going to have a complimentary luncheon for the community who attends. But I did want to mention one thing, Tom, for people who are listening. If you think you might like to attend this event and see what this new equipment looks like, we do ask for RSVPs in this case so that we can make sure we have enough lunch for everybody. And so people can call 877-926-8300 if they would like to, just let us know they're coming. And I also wanted to mention people should take a look at our local AARP Delaware blog page, aarp.org/DE.
Is there hope, Kim, that others might see this park that's being launched at Herman Holloway Park and maybe try to duplicate it elsewhere in the state so that maybe people elsewhere in the state would have access to a similar type of opportunity?
Well, I think that, this could be the impetus for something like that. We are happy to take the lead and set the agenda for healthy aging right in local parks where people can go and, find something easy to use and attractive. And, not only is this fitness park good for your body and your mind, it's good for socializing. Everybody knows it's a lot more fun to exercise with other people than by yourself. So this is also part of our initiative where we want to prevent people from becoming too isolated in their homes. We want them to have that social support. And what better way than exercising together with people that live near you?
I was going to say, that's got to help in the effort to kind of help people age in place, right?
Absolutely. We talk all the time about how we know people in Delaware and really all over the country want to stay in their own homes for as long as they can. And this is really a step in the right direction for that. It's a piece of the puzzle that when you put all these things together with, there are other things that fall into place that can help people age in their own homes. This is a piece of it that really makes it better for them and makes it more possible for them to stay healthy at home.
Thanks to AARP Delaware's Communications Director, Kimberly Iapolucci, for her time on The Green this week. Again, the ribbon cutting for this new fitness park at Wilmington's Herman Holloway Park is this Wednesday, September 25th, starting at 11 a.m. And we close out the green next with Enlighten Me and more on the newly opened Delaware Botanic Gardens in Sussex County. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media. Thanks for spending time with us on The Green this week. I'm Tom Byrne. A 37-acre, years-in-the-making coastal garden in Dagsboro opened this week. The Delaware Botanic Gardens is located along Pepper Creek and consists of four main gardens and a welcome center. And in this week's Enlighten Me, Delaware Public Media's Kelly Steele chats with the garden's communication director, Brent Baker, to learn more about it.
Tell me all about the Botanic Gardens. How did this project, how did it get started?
Well, we had some local people here in Sussex County that got tired of driving up north to places like Longwood Garden and said, we need a botanic garden in southern Delaware. And they got together and made up some plans. And by golly, all the people volunteered and came together. We raised some money.
All right, talk about the location. It'll be at Pepper Creek in Dagsboro. Why this location?
Well, we looked at several locations, and we found a 37-acre plot, which was an old soybean farm in Sussex County, and it slopes down to Pepper Creek. And we got together with something called the Sussex County Land Trust, and they leased it to us for $1 a year, for 99 years, and then we can renew it for two times, so we have it for a total of 297 years. And this will be the only botanic garden in southern Delaware. We're about an hour's drive from Dover and about a 2 hours drive from Wilmington. We're on Piney Neck Road, right near Dagsboro. We're about a mile and a half off the main street of Dagsboro.
All right, let's go into detail. A lot of us familiar with Longwood Gardens. Tell us what the Botanic Gardens will consist of.
Okay, this is, as I said, at 37 acres, and we've got four main gardens here. Kind of the crown jewel for us is the Meadow Garden, designed by Pete Aldoff. You might not know who he is. He's a world-famous Dutch garden designer, and he designed a meadow which has 70,000 native plants and grasses. All were hand-planted by our volunteers, and about 85% are native plants, and 15% are pollinator-compatible perennials and grasses. And that means when you go out there and you're weeding in the garden, you're liable to be hit by some bees and butterflies. So this is a living garden for wildlife, and we have winding trails throughout this 2-acre meadow garden that are all ADA compliant, which means if you have a wheelchair, you can come and enjoy this garden. So that's the meadow garden. Then we have a learning garden sponsored by Dogfish Head Brewery, which is composed of a wetland outdoor classroom, and that's where we have hands-on training of how the environment works in a wetland. And we also have three inland dunes. The dunes are dunes that were created 2,000 years ago in Delaware, and we've recreated them, and also it's a place for wildlife. In fact, we just planted 1,800 blueberry bushes in two days in these dunes.
Wow.
Now there's a folly garden, and you say, what does folly mean? Folly means it's planted on the ruins of an old building. In this case, it's an old farm that was here in the 20th century, and there are 2,500 bulb plants, and this is our spring garden, and it's a sea of yellow daffodils. It takes us back to Delmarva life and the old farms in the rural area. And finally, we've got 12 acres of woodlands that slowly comes down to 1,000 feet of shoreline at Pepper Creek. Pepper Creek flows into the Inn River Bay and out into the Atlantic, and in that woodlands, we got 1.8 miles of winding trails. You can walk around the woodlands. It's very beautiful.
I cannot wait to see this. I'm a member at Longwood Gardens, have been for ages, and it just relaxes me to go up there and walk around and take my time and enjoy the great outdoors. How long will this garden be open? I can't imagine long, right? Because everything's going to start dying off.
Well, it's a Pete Aldoff has a Four Seasons garden. There's something always blooming. You can always tell a good designer. A good designer does a garden, so no matter when you come, something will be in bloom.
What about flowers?
Right now, we're not going to be over on weekends, and this is the interesting thing about the garden. This garden is completely built and manned by volunteers, and we're trying to get our volunteer corps organized, and right now, we'll be open Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday as we roll along, and we hope to open on the weekends a little later, but we'll let everybody know by putting out some announcements.
Gotcha. I'm kind of sad to hear you're only going to be open during the week. With my hours, I get up at 1 a.m. to come to work, and I work until about noon every day.
Well, here's the deal, Kelly.
I won't be able to see it.
Here's the deal, Kelly. For you, a special deal. You just call me, and we'll figure something out.
Okay, that sounds good. I will do that because my partner and I, like I said, we go to Longwood and we love this kind of thing, but Saturdays is about the only day I have. So I will call you and you can give me a special tour.
Well, it's interesting. We have a relationship with Longwood. When we began this project several years ago, back in 2015, Longwood Foundation gave us a $750,000, what they call leadership grant, to get this garden started. And so we feel kind of a kinship with Longwood. And also, our new director of horticulture that just began on the 1st of August, Brian Trader, came down after working at 10 years at Longwood. So we have a lot of people, and needless to say, a lot of us travel up to Longwood on a regular basis. But now, for the first time in southern Delaware, we will have a botanic garden.
Thanks to Brent Baker, Communications Director for the Delaware Botanic Gardens, and our Kelly Steele for enlightening us this week. More information about the gardens can be found at DelawareGardens.org. And that's a wrap on this week's edition of The Green. The stories and interviews you've heard are online right now at DelawarePublic.org. Just head over to The Green's page on our website. And remember, you can also check out The Green via podcast at our website and on Apple Podcasts and the NPR One app. We'd also like to hear from you. Give us your feedback and story ideas on our Facebook page, on Twitter, at TheGreenDE, or by emailing us at TheGreen@DelawarePublic.org. Thanks to all those who helped make today's show possible, contributor Eileen Dalabrida, and Delaware Public Media's Sophia Schmidt and Kelly Steele. For all of them and the rest of the staff here at Delaware Public Media, I'm Tom Burns saying thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you again next week on The Green, where Delaware explores its common ground.